Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
It is stated that our beloved Saif al-Musallat, nicknamed Saif, was brutally beaten to death in our family's land by illegal Israeli settlers who were attempting to steal it. Israeli settlers surrounded Saif for over 3 hours as paramedics attempted to reach him, but the mob of settlers blocked the ambulance and paramedics from providing life-saving aid.
Israeli settlers kill another American citizen in the occupied West Bank, bringing the number of Americans killed there to 7 since October 2023. The settlers also shot to death a 23-year-old Palestinian in the same attack. We'll go to the West Bank for the latest. Then, who exactly is being held at the so-called alligator Alcatraz? And who's in charge? Hundreds of men who are being held there have no criminal charges against them. That's according to a new Miami Herald investigation. We'll speak to the reporter. And we'll talk to Florida Congressmember Maxwell Frost, who just toured the Everglades jail.
They didn't let us walk fully in. They opened the door and let us look in, and people were yelling at us, "Help me, help me." I heard somebody in the back yell, "I'm a U.S. citizen." We're going to look into that. But something that really struck me is as we were walking away from those cages, they started chanting, "Libertad, libertad, libertad, freedom."
And Purge Palantir, that was the banner held by protesters across the country, from Seattle to Palo Alto, Denver to New York. The technology company, they say, uses AI to supercharge surveillance from ICE to the Israeli military.
We want Palantir.
We want Palantir.
Out of New York City.
Out of New York.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. Supreme Court's cleared the way for President Trump to dismantle the Department of Education without congressional approval. The unsigned ruling paves the way for Trump to lay off 1,400 workers at the agency. The court's three liberal justices dissented. Justice Sonia Sotomayor said the decision will, quote, unleash untold harm, delaying or denying educational opportunities and leaving students to suffer from discrimination, sexual assault, and other civil rights violations without the federal resources Congress intended. Sotomayor went on to write, the majority is either willfully blind to the implications of its ruling or naive. Either way, the threat to our Constitution's separation of powers is grave, she wrote. In other education news, 24 states and the District of Columbia have sued the Trump administration for freezing nearly $7 billion in previously approved education grants. Part of the funding would have helped schools offer free or low-cost after-school programs and help train and retain teachers. The Washington Post is reporting the Trump administration's revoking access to bond hearings for people who entered the U.S. through non-approved channels, ordering officers to detain them for the length of their removal proceedings, a process which can take months or even years. The rule will apply to people who've recently entered the U.S., as well as those who've been here already for decades. Immigration expert Aaron Reichlin Melnick asserted the policy is based on faulty interpretation of existing law, warning, quote, if immigration judges begin to adopt this interpretation nationwide, it will mean even less due process. It will mean more people flown around the country and jailed far from lawyers, loved ones, and hope. And that's the goal, he said. Trump's massive tax and spending package allocates $45 billion to expand immigrant prisons and is set to nearly double ICE's current detention capacity, locking up some 100,000 people a day. In more immigration news, an ICE memo confirms the Trump administration plans to deport more immigrants to third countries where they have no ties. The plan could see people forcibly transferred with as little as 6 hours' notice to countries that have not provided assurances that they will be safe from persecution or torture. People being sent to countries where diplomats have offered assurances of safety could be removed with no advance notice. In other immigration news, an appeals court Monday briefly extended temporary protected status, or TPS, for some 12,000 Afghan nationals living in the U.S. just hours before it was set to expire. Both the Trump administration and plaintiffs have been asked to submit briefs this week. The United Nations Development Program, the UNDP, has issued a dire plea for Israel to allow more fuel into Gaza. In a statement, the agency said, quote, "Without fuel, the lifelines will vanish for 2.1 million people in Gaza," unquote. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency, UNRWA, said today 1 in 10 children in Gaza seen at UN clinics since 2024 have been malnourished, and that malnutrition rates are growing amidst Israel's siege. This all comes as Israel continues to launch attacks across Gaza, including targeting a tent housing a displaced family in Khan Yunis. Bilal al-Adluni described how the attack killed much of his brother's family.
They were martyred inside their tent. Hassan was staying there with his wife and children. They targeted the tent. No one survived except his eldest son, Muhammad, who was outside filling water near the tent. The rest were martyred. Hassan was martyred, as well as his 8-month pregnant wife, Saad, his 14-year-old son, Abdulrahman, and his daughters, Fairuz and Shahad.
In other news from Gaza, the news outlet 972 has revealed Israel's increasingly using grenade-firing drones to enforce evacuation orders. Israeli soldiers admitted to 972 they deliberately targeted civilians so others will, quote, learn not to return to their homes. One soldier said using drones to target Palestinians was, quote, like a video game. In news from Syria, a ceasefire has been declared in the southern province of Sweida, where fighting between local Sunni Bedouin tribes and Druze armed groups killed as many as 100. On Monday, Israel launched airstrikes on Syrian forces being sent into the region. Under the pretext of protecting the Druze, Israel has repeatedly bombed Syria in recent months. On Monday, Israel also bombed areas of the Bekaa Valley in eastern Lebanon. Israel targeted what it claimed to be Hezbollah training camps. During a meeting with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, President Trump formally announced plans to send billions of dollars worth of weapons to Ukraine, including Patriot missiles. Trump said the U.S. would sell the missiles and weapons to NATO members, which would then send them to Ukraine. Trump also threatened new sanctions and tariffs against Russia if it did not agree to a peace deal.
But we're very, very unhappy with them, and we're going to be doing very severe tariffs if we don't have a deal in 50 days. Tariffs at about 100%. You'd call them secondary tariffs. You know what that means. But today we're going to talk about something else. And as you know, we've spent $350 billion approximately on this war with Russia and Ukraine, and would like to see it end.
In Sudan, a human rights group is accusing the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces of killing some 300 people, including children and pregnant women, when they raided and burned villages in the state of North Kordofan over the weekend. The devastating conflict in Sudan has displaced 13 million people and killed at least 40,000, though some estimates put that number at more than 150,000. Earlier this year, the Sudanese Doctors Syndicate said over 500,000 infants have died in Sudan due to malnutrition since the war broke out in April 2023. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi Friday fired the Justice Department's top ethics lawyer, as well as at least 20 other Justice Department staffers who were linked to former special counsel Jack Smith's investigations into Donald Trump. Joseph Terrell had been at the Department of Justice for 16 years and oversaw the ethics staff. He said he was not given a reason for his removal. Terrell was tasked with advising Bondi, FBI Director Kash Patel, and other top officials on conflicts of interest disclosures and gifts. Meanwhile, Reuters reports 69 lawyers, or roughly two-thirds of the Justice Department unit charged with defending Trump administration policies in court, have quit. Some lawyers told Reuters they could not go ahead with defending policies that were not legally justifiable. The Pentagon's announced multi-million dollar contracts with a number of AI companies, including a $200 million contract with Elon Musk's XAI. The deal comes just days after Musk's chatbot, Grok, unleashed anti-Semitic rants praising Hitler. On Monday, activists gathered to protest in front of Palantir offices in multiple cities, including Seattle, Palo Alto, Denver, and here in New York. NYPD arrested at least four people as demonstrators called out the tech giant for, quote, turbocharging ICE deportations, complicity in the genocide of Palestinians, and expanding surveillance of every U.S. resident, unquote. In Denver, former Palantir worker Juan Sebastian Pinto addressed a crowd in front of the company's Colorado headquarters.
Francesca Albanese, an incredible representative for human rights at the UN, an independent observer who recently released a report accusing multiple American companies of participating in the prolongation of genocide in Palestine for profit. Now they are turning inwards. These are companies like not only like Palantir, but IBM and Google, Meta,
Cisco,
Amazon, all of them contributing to creating these enormous dragnets that allow people to be targeted for their personal data, for their family connections, for their beliefs, in ways they don't even understand. And they're bringing these same kinds of targeting technologies here to America.
We'll hear voices from the New York City Palantir protest later in the broadcast and speak with a Wired reporter. On Monday, faith leaders, including Bishop William Barber, led demonstrations in 11 southern states to protest President Trump's so-called big, beautiful budget. Protesters carried caskets to the local offices of Republican lawmakers to represent the tens of thousands of people who could die as a result of the bill's cuts to Medicaid and other programs. Bishop Barber spoke in Memphis.
This is the largest transfer of wealth
yes.
from the poor to the rich since chattel slavery. This slashing of services is going to cause economic insecurity and preventable deaths.
The New York Times has revealed United Health has launched an aggressive campaign to silence critics following the assassination of its chief executive, Brian Thompson, last year. In recent months, the health insurance company has targeted news outlets, journalists, a filmmaker, a doctor, and others. In one instance, Amazon and Vimeo removed a documentary critical of the health insurance industry. United Health also reportedly threatened legal action against a Texas doctor who posted a TikTok video describing how she had to interrupt a surgery to take a call from the company about the patient's insurance coverage. And disgraced former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has formally announced he'll run for mayor as an independent, losing to Zohran Mamdani in the Democratic primary. Mamdani, who's a Democratic socialist, shocked the political establishment by receiving more votes than any other mayoral candidate in New York City's primary election history. On Monday, Zohran Mamdani posted a link seeking donations under Cuomo's announcement on X. Mamdani's post quickly outpaced the number of likes and reshares on Cuomo's original post. Current New York City Mayor Eric Adams is also running in November as an independent in what could be a five-way race. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at the rise of Israeli settler violence against Palestinians across the occupied West Bank. The family of 20-year-old American Sefola Musalet is demanding justice and for the U.S. government to lead an investigation into his killing by Israeli settlers. Musalat, known as Saif, to his family and friends, was in the West Bank from Florida to visit his relatives in the village of Amasra Ash-Sharkia, northeast of Ramallah. He was born and grew up in Port Charlotte, Florida, and worked at his father's ice cream and dessert shop, which they'd recently opened in Tampa. On Friday, Musalat and another Palestinian, 23-year-old Mohammed Al-Shalabi, were attacked by a group of Israeli settlers while they were in neighboring town of Sinjil, where their families own farmland, and an area Israeli settlers have recently repeatedly targeted with violent attacks, with Palestinians describing being terrorized as Israelis have seized agricultural land on a Palestinian farm. In response, residents of nearby villages have organized to protect the land. On Friday, when Saif joined them, Israeli settlers brutally beat him and fatally shot Al-Shalabi. Eyewitnesses said at least two of the settlers were armed with M16 assault rifles and wore army pants and described how the settlers surrounded Saif and others, also attacking them with batons. Following news of the attack, Saif's cousin Diana read a statement from the family.
We are devastated that our beloved Saif al-Musallat, nicknamed Saif, was brutally beaten to death in our family's land by illegal Israeli settlers who were attempting to steal it. Israeli settlers surrounded Saif for over 3 hours as paramedics attempted to reach him. But the mob of settlers blocked the ambulance and paramedics from providing life-saving aid. After the mob of Israeli settlers cleared, hours later, Saif's younger brother rushed to carry him to the ambulance. Saif was killed and died before reaching the hospital.
On Sunday, hundreds of Palestinians gathered for a funeral procession in the West Bank for Saif Musalat and Mohammed Al-Shalabi. Saif's father, Kamel, traveled from Florida to attend his son's funeral. Saif's family says they haven't heard from U.S. officials. In a statement to Al Jazeera Friday, the State Department said it, quote, has no higher priority than the safety and security of U.S. citizens overseas. We are aware of reports of the death of a U.S. citizen in the West Bank. When a U.S. citizen dies overseas, we stand ready to provide consular services, the U.S. State Department said. Haaretz reported there are currently no Israelis detained in connection with Saif's killing. He's at least the seventh U.S. citizen to be killed by Israeli soldiers or settlers since 2022, with advocates condemning the U.S.'s inaction and fighting for accountability, including in the killings of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, May 11, 2022, fatally shot by Israeli soldiers while she reported on an Israeli raid outside the Jenin refugee camp. And Turkish-American activist Aysenur Ezgi-Aygi, who was shot dead by Israeli forces while taking part in a weekly protest against illegal Israeli settlements in the town of Beitar in 2024. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera reports Israeli violence has killed some 1,000 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since October 23. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Yaffa, Jonathan Pollack is a longtime anti-Zionist activist and co-founder of Anarchists Against the Wall. He was injured Friday by Israeli settlers in the West Bank town of Sinjil when protesting just before Saif was killed. And in the occupied West Bank, we're joined by Nizar Milbas, a distant relative, a close friend of Saifullah Musalat's family. Nizar Milbas is in the village of Amasra Ash-Sharkia, northeast of Ramallah. We thank you both for being with us. Jonathan, as I look at you, you have a black eye. Can you describe what happened that day leading up to the Israeli settlers beating Saif to death?
I can tell what I've witnessed, which is somewhat limited because I was attacked and detained very soon after everything began. Myself and another Palestinian, a young Palestinian man, were helping an older injured Palestinian man, evacuating him away from where settlers were attacking people. at some point, the settlers descended on us from above with batons and just beat us up. The young Palestinian man that was with me more than myself, and myself as well, is very evident from the bruises on my face. It's important to note that there were Israeli soldiers there. They literally pried us from the settlers' hands while they attacked us, while we were on the floor and they were on top of us. Despite that, they've chosen to detain and arrest us and do nothing with the assailants, despite having seen everything and despite having been there. We were detained there for a long time before being taken to the police station. And what we saw at some point is that all the settlers who were present, which were at least two dozens, entered their cars all at once and drove in sight, like while the soldiers see them, drove into the village. None of the soldiers have thought of stopping them or arresting them or doing anything else to prevent the lynch that took place afterwards, in which Saif Allah and Muhammad were killed. Later on that day, when we were already down the road, still detained, we at some point saw a convoy of at least a dozen settler cars filled with people passing after the lynch, passing by Israeli law enforcement, both like military border police, which is a paramilitary force of the Israeli police, and regular Israeli civilian police. None of them had dreamed of stopping these settlers who had just been involved in killing someone, at least some of them, and even asking for their IDs. People often talk about settlers, about Israeli settlers and extremist violence. It's important to me to convey the message that this is a red herring. This isn't an issue of some extremists, of outlaws acting outside the confines of Israeli society. The settlers and the military don't only work hand in hand, like it was evident from how our assault was treated and how the whole incident was treated. They are part and parcel of implementing the same policy of the Israeli government, of the Israeli regime, the policy of ethnic cleansing in the West Bank, the policy of employing as much violence as possible in order to remove Palestinians from their land. It was evident in the murder of Saif Allah and of Muhammad on Tuesday. It is evident in the ethnic cleansing of dozens and dozens of Palestinian communities from the West Bank since October 7th, 2023. And it is an extension of the genocide that Israel is perpetrating in the Gaza Strip. And the common denominator of all of these is that it is one policy employed by the Israeli regime, representative of Israeli public opinion, and that Israel is allowed to employ as much force as it wants, as much violence as it wants, in order to carry out these policies, in order to exterminate in the Gaza Strip and physically remove Palestinians in the West Bank from their lands.
And Jonathan, when you were held by the Israeli police, what happened? How long were you held, and how were you treated by them?
This isn't the. I'm sorry to say, but this isn't the question. The question isn't about me personally or how a specific policemen or specific policemen in plural treated me. What I'm interested in talking about is the systemic nature of what is happening. So what is interesting in this case is that I was arrested with another Palestinian. While I was released very quickly, the Palestinian man was only released from court today, released by court from jail today. And this is another example of Israeli apartheid, where I myself was processed and tried under the Israeli penal code, while my Palestinian comrade, the one who was arrested with me in under the exact same circumstances, suspected of the exact same things, assaulted like exactly like I was by the exact same settlers, the same settlers who later went on to kill Saifullah and Muhammad. We were processed through two different legal systems. The Israeli penal code for myself and Israeli military law for my Palestinian comrade. So when we talk about how I was treated, the important question to ask is why I was treated differently from my Palestinian comrade. And what does that mean about the Israeli regime and the ability and need for it to be confronted not only from within, not only from Palestine, but also be forced into accountability from the outside? What support do Palestinians deserve, and how do we bring about a reality in which they are able to gain their liberation?
I'd like to bring in, if possible, Nizar Milbus as well. Nizar, can you talk about when you learned of the attack on friends and relatives of yours?
Well, let me give a little bit of context. We have been, this area has been an area where it's called El Batin. It's on the outskirts of the town. And many of the landowners are American citizens, and we've been trying to reach, as you're aware, you know, the settlers are taking over not only Area C, which, to give you know your viewers some context, Area C was an area that was allocated during the Oslo Accords, which was supposed to be part of a Palestinian state, but eventually the Israeli government allocated it, which a lot of the land is strategic land. It has some of high altitudes, very important security installations, and you know a lot of fertile land, farmland, and so in the past, you know, I remember when I was living here in the 90s, when my parents brought us here to learn our culture and root us in the land. You know, they would build communities in these areas that were quite a distance from our towns. But after the Oslo Accords, the areas A and B, which are supposed to be under that agreement, is supposed to be civilly and security wise administrated by the Palestinian Authority. So even under Israeli law, they're not even supposed to encroach anywhere near this area. We've been hearing over the past, since October 7th, that they've been taking lands and encroaching and destroying property as they move towards Area A and B. But what really caught our eye is that we never expected, given that our town and the surrounding towns have a large majority of American residents that have American citizenship. Our town in particular, the inhabitants comprise of about 60% American citizens. And the land in this particular area where this attack has happened, that happened on Friday, is on the outskirts of the town. It's an area that is has beautiful scenery, very fertile. Many of the landowners... It's one of the last havens that Palestinians have left to enjoy their time, given that the fact that, you know, Palestinians are not allowed to go, you know, to enter so-called Israel proper. They can't go to the beach. They can't go to the springs. They can't visit the desert. So they're secluded in this area of the West Bank where they're not allowed to go to the Area C, which is some of the most, you know, beautiful parts of the West Bank. And so this area, the Batin, it's